The Floor Academy podcast is sponsored by Trilama, the trade labor marketplace, where businesses can find skilled trade labor, such as flooring installers, and where flooring installers and other skilled tradespeople can find permanent or project work. You can set up your profile at Trilama.com, TRALAMA.com, or download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. And remember, Trilama is always free for skilled tradespeople. Welcome to the Floor Academy podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, owner of Illustrious Hardwoods in Mesa, Arizona. We're here to talk with flooring professionals from all over the country about the issues that matter to you. I want to encourage you to learn while you earn. This week's guest is Josh Funkhauser. Josh is a partner at Davidson & Funkhauser, a law firm in Scottsdale, Arizona. He specializes in business and real estate law. We look at the whys and hows of getting your business going the right way from the start, as well as how some items may be ever evolving. This is a conversation you won't want to miss. Stay tuned. Josh Funkhauser, are you on the line?
I am. How are you, Kyle?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me on the Floor Academy podcast.
Oh, thanks for the invite. I'm glad to be here.
You're welcome. This will be a fun one. We'll throw my all my flooring listeners for a loop, and we'll get a lawyer local to my Phoenix area on here.
Yeah, we'll try not to bore anybody too much with the technical lawyer stuff that's in the civil realm, but believe it or not, we're all kind of tradesmen. It's kind of a technical field, much like in with similarities to contractors. So
I believe it. You just memorize stuff out of a book more.
Yeah, that's true. Oh. Just keep practicing at it, getting better at it as best you can.
I love it. So, yeah, we have a, so Josh is a business lawyer, but I'll have him introduce himself here. And then we're going to get into some, not so much of the fun business stuff, but the really important stuff that will, man, it affects your livelihood so much. And there's a lot of guys, myself included, probably, that are running around with poorly set up businesses. So we're going to try and tackle that and get some questions answered. But Josh, why don't you go ahead and let everybody know who you are, where you are, what you do, and why you do it, and all that?
Sure. Thanks. So my name, again, is Josh Funkhauser. I'm a partner at the law firm Davidson & Funkhauser in Scottsdale, Arizona. We also have an office in Tyler, Texas, and I'm licensed in Texas, Ohio, and Arizona. So we handle primarily business and real estate law. So anything that has to do with contracts and disputes. So keeping our clients out of disputes is our primary goal. But if something bad happens and somebody comes along, we're glad to have the opportunity to try to clean up the mess and put the client in as favorable a position as possible. But I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, went to Ohio for school, started my practice out there as a 1099 contractor attorney. And so I've been owning my own business since about 9 years ago. And so I'm a business owner as well. And we deal with all the administrative stuff that you have to as a business owner for ourselves. And then we try to help clients navigate the real technical stuff so that they can focus on what they do best, which is whether it's flooring, and you can get right down into that, into the why you went into business in the first place and stuff, the contracting work. So, yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's start it off real basic. Okay. So I'm working for somebody. This is how it usually goes. This is why somebody becomes they go out on their own in the contracting field. Employees generally get paid very badly, and employees are generally not paid as employees. They're paid as 1099 subcontractors when they should not be. So they see the boss's invoice to the client and they say, "Hey, how come I don't make $8,000? Like, why do you get $8,000 and you're only paying me $2,000 a week? Like, what's with that? I want the $8,000. So they get frustrated, right? And then they go out on their own and they start talking to homeowners, and they're getting checks cut to them in their personal name. So now I essentially have this business, right? Like I'm out working. So start me off. What are my options from ground zero that I need to be looking at, considering to even protect myself?
Sure. So as always, primarily you want to ensure that you're compliant with whatever local laws that are in place. So in Arizona, you've got the registrar of contractors, and you mm-hmm. need to make sure you're licensed if you're in a trade that requires a license, as most do, and get the bond. And so that's at least your initial level of protection. After that, I would say speaking with a good insurance agent who can get you set up with protection for liability is extremely important. It's almost more important than setting up an entity structure to shield your personal assets from liability. Because even if you have that, and I'll talk about that entity structure in a minute, but mm-hmm. even if you have that entity structure set up, if you get sued, it's expensive right out of the gate. And if you don't want to just walk away from your LLC and its assets, and it's not really an option, especially as you get more and more established. So having insurance in place is important, because that insurance can also, in a lot of situations, provide a defense to the claim. And then you're not coming out of pocket on attorneys. Mm-hmm. And so getting an appropriate level of insurance is at least something that needs to be heavily considered. And every situation is different, but I would say the first line of defense in a lot of cases is your insurance. Once we get involved as the attorney, what most people do now, most business owners, when they're just starting off, it's a small company, you don't have imminent plans of going public with your company, then you set up an LLC. So that's a limited liability company. And this is the hot structure at this point, but a limited liability company is essentially a separate legal entity that's the entity that's entering into contracts with your customers. It's the entity that owns the assets of the business and has its own separate bank account. And it will absorb liability in the event that something goes wrong with a project. So, I should note that there's no asset protection structure that is foolproof, that is 100% guaranteed to work and shield you from personal liability. But an LLC provides that protection to the extent that is possible. So mm-hmm. you're providing this protection to avoid your personal assets, like your house or your personal vehicles and your jewelry or whatever items of value you have, to prevent that from being subject to collection in the event a big accident happens on a project and you're somehow deemed to be liable for that accident. By setting up the LLC and making sure you have a proper contract with the LLC between the LLC and you as the owner, and then getting an employer identification number for tax purposes, that is very important to at least look into and consider doing. And almost always that's the route to take for a small business, at least starting out.
Okay. So, and I'm with you. So when I even my local bank wouldn't even set up a business account with me until I had that EIN number. So essentially, you're going to set up your LLC and you're going to apply for the EIN at the same time, and then you can go and make all the rest of that happen. But getting the insurance, I 100% agree with. Insurance is cheap. Getting licensed if it's required in your state is generally really cheap. And then having a bond is all cheap in the grand scheme of things for the amount of money you're going to pay out versus the amount of money you can bring in. I'm 100% with you that that's where you need to start. So we talked about, you know, you're going to set up this limited liability corporation. It's there to shield you from as much damage as possible, so you're not losing things on the personal side. But I know a lot of guys won't even go about setting that up, and they're just out there operating as sole proprietors on their own. They continue to take checks in their own name. I don't want to put that risk out there for myself, but essentially you're just throwing everything you own out there on every job, are you not? Like, there's nothing protecting any of your personal assets when you operate that way.
That's correct. You're kind of walking around a minefield. You don't know what you could step on that's really going to mess up your aspirations as a business owner, mm-hmm. and really your personal goals. So that could lead to bankruptcy that might otherwise be avoidable. And then some debts are not dischargeable in bankruptcy as well. So and typically those types of debts that aren't dischargeable in bankruptcy, they'll get through an LLC anyways. But as long as you're being honest and you're going about your business and you're not having a drunk driving accident on the job or committing a fraud, you've got substantial protection with a limited liability company and rather than a sole proprietorship. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of people I see will register a trade name with the state. With the state is what I usually see. So registering a trade name, it says Bills Construction, and they think that maybe this provides me the protection. But all that does is it gives everybody notice that you have reserved this name with the state, mm-hmm. and that this is who you need to contact if you're going to sue Bills Construction. It's the person who's registered as the owner. So setting up that LLC, and then if you're going to use a trade name, like you want to operate under a different name than the LLC, then you register it as owned by that LLC.
Okay. And then you can also set up that DBA as well that does business as, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, I mean, I know what I paid a couple years ago. I don't know if the Arizona Corporation Commission has upped their rates, but I want to say it was like $50 to $75 to file, and for the processing, if I wanted like super quick processing, it was like another $50, and then it's like $80 to the paper to advertise in the business paper for like 3 weeks to say, hey, I set up my business. Every state's going to be different. I get that, but maybe like $200 of my own money and some frustrating time trying to make out paperwork I didn't understand. And I'm sure if I would have had someone like you do it, maybe I paid like $500.
Yeah, you absolutely need, I think you should consult with a professional on it. It's like for me, I'm not going to lay a floor for myself. Mm-hmm. I know I'm going to end up having everything uneven and there's going to be something I'm missing. I'm spending four times as long as a professional.
Yeah.
Well, dealing with this when I could be working, being efficient at what I know I can do well, and then just paying somebody else to handle it. So talking to an attorney, talking to a tax advisor and getting that structure set up right, it's not very expensive. And especially when considering the risk of costs that could arise if you just skip that step. You know, the saying sometimes is that you could have spent $1,500 on something at the beginning and had your contract done up properly, and now it's turned into a $100,000 lawsuit, something exactly. like that. But yeah, in Arizona, it is like less than $100 to set up an LLC in costs, and then having an attorney look over consider your situation and set it up the appropriate way for you is typically not very expensive. And then if it gets really complicated, then they can get more expensive, but either way, it's like for me, I'm not going to send a client down a path that is going to be more expensive to use me than if they were to just not go down that path.
Yeah.
So
No, I get it. And look, I screwed my paperwork up, which then delayed me for like multiple weeks because I had to resubmit it. I checked the box wrong, or I put the information on the wrong line, and they rejected it. And then I had to wait through like the 40 days or 50 days they were out on reviewing stuff. So paying a professional might just be worth it to get your paperwork done faster.
Yeah, add an extra space in between some words or something like that. There are a lot of things they'll kick it back on.
It was something stupid like that, and I laughed about it. I fixed it, sent it in, and everything was good. But at the time, I was broke, and I was like, I don't have any money to pay anybody. Like, this is what's happening. So it's possible to do it yourself, but if you have the money to spend on getting that professional advice, it's always a smart thing to do. Just like homeowners bring us in to consult on floors, you know, we're the professionals. So having that professional in your corner never hurts. Less popular is a corporation these days. Generally, like you said, that's for like if you're going to take a company public. I know you have to set up boards with them. You have to have annual meetings. You have to keep minutes. So that's not done as often. But is there any business you can think off the top of your head where that would be like the advantageous way to go right off the bat? At least for a contractor, big business, something like that. Someone's going to do that right away. But
sure. And I've seen it with companies from that have owners in Canada or across a border somewhere. And there are tax implications. And I always rely on a tax expert or something like that, like some cross-border tax accountant.
Okay.
And other than that, I could envision a corporation being used for some other esoteric tax issue, but really, I mean, I rarely will set up a corporation. I think the only times I've done it in the past 8 years were there are nonprofit corporations. That's different. If you're trying to obtain tax exempt status, and you wouldn't do that as a contractor, but then you set up a nonprofit corporation.
Man, can I do that somehow?
If you're doing it for charitable purposes,
totally.
No profit is being passed on to any owners.
Oh, man, that'd be great. It's not profit. It's just money for me to build a lifestyle with. Yes. No. Okay. So let's try and get into some nitty gritty stuff. Because we were talking a little before. And I know this is the case with probably a lot of people besides me. So I bought my truck and my trailer. They're in my personal name. And that probably should not be the case because they were purchased with company money. So they should probably be under the business name because they technically are on the books as assets. So if I go and I get in a wreck, I'm kind of screwed, am I not? Like that, the veil of protection from the LLC that should exist in that space, it no longer exists, is my understanding.
That could be the case. And I'm sure you hate hearing that from lawyers. It's it depends, but that's typically the answer. But when you have an asset outside the LLC and it's involved in some sort of accident that the company, it should really be a company activity. What you're doing is even opening up the door for that argument to take place. And so you could have an insurer denying your claim based on, you didn't have the right named insured on the insurance policy because it's really owned by this. And so you might jeopardize your insurance protection that your company insurance would otherwise provide. And so just having that argument right there is a loss because it's going to cost you money to deal with. And it just opens you up to risk and stress. So having those assets in the LLC is a lot cleaner.
Okay.
As long as you're not using it for the personal use. And even then it's just, it'll depend on what your tax advisor says about whether you can use that for personal use.
So you just, well, I mean, this is where it comes down to everything's a business activity. So that's easy right. enough. Where were you going? There's an estimate that way. Why do you have a four wheeler on the back? They're way off in the desert.
Yeah. And once you can start getting into a whole bunch of logic traps and litigation and some of the stuff that lawyers come up with to convince you of something that, you know, you wouldn't think of originally.
Yeah, no, I get it. Crazy. It can always be, there's always going to be trouble. It's a matter of how you set it up and what you're doing. So, it sounds like the better idea is to put those in the company name and then just make sure that, they're used for proper purposes. And, you have some stuff at home that is meant for home use. So that's right. At the end of the day, like, that's going to be the safest way to go about it. People bend the rules all the time, and, you bend the rules and you might get caught.
Yeah, and it's kind of going back to that, just spending the money up front to make sure you're set up right. That's the reason you do it, is so you can sleep at night. Hopefully you never have to invoke the LLC. Hopefully you can make all of the problems with your customers right. And I know a lot of people are like, I just avoid disputes, because if there's an issue, we're gonna work it out. We're gonna get on in person, talk it out, and figure this out. But I see the people come in who they're past that point and they've got all the problems coming up. So I have kind of a distorted view of how it goes, because I'm dealing with a bunch of negative situations, but it just doing it the clean right way it's the best way to do it. You don't have to worry about a tax issue. You don't have to worry about an insurance issue. You want to just be able to hand over a claim to your insurer when necessary, and then just go back to work and make money rather than saving a little bit of money here and there.
Okay. Make sure assets are where they belong, make sure you're set up and protected. You're dealing with a lot of contracts. So are you writing up any contracts for business owners that, you know, from leases to how the, you know, essentially for me, like how the flooring project is going to go when payment terms are you doing any of that kind of work?
Absolutely. Speaking about the LLC, you should have an operating agreement, and that's the agreement between the company and the owners. And so, and it's also between the owners if you have multiple owners of the LLC. And that will dictate, well, what happens if we aren't agreeing anymore on how to operate this business. And it can deal with dissolving the company, splitting the assets, who's input what into the company for the capital expenditures. And so what are you entitled to upon liquidating this company? And rather than just having an uncertain term and having a he said, she said argument about, well, he promised that I would be the 75% owner or whatever it is. So really that having that operating agreement set up is important. Plus it can provide additional evidence that you're not violating the formalities of having an LLC set up. An LLC is simple. You register with the state, you have your EIN, you have your separate bank account, and you have your operating agreement, and then you don't commingle funds, you don't commit fraud, and then you can generally maintain that liability protection. So having that operating agreement to show to the lawyer on the other side to say, look, we know this is a legitimate company, that's a valuable tool to have in your evidence chest. And so then when you get to contracts with your customers,
let's get to that in a second, because now I have a question. Sure. So I don't have an operating agreement, but do I need, I'm a single member LLC. So do I need one? Is there an advantage to me having written out that, like, hey, I own 100% of the company. If I dissolve it, I'm essentially selling off everything to myself. Like, I don't even know how that would go.
Sure. If you don't have the operating agreement in most states, I believe most states, so in Arizona and Ohio, you'll have you'll just revert to the statute, which is just the law, the written law that the governor has signed that deals with the relationship between the members, the owners of the LLC. So that's going to govern the relationship between the owners. And there's some things that you may want to change depending on your situation. So you have this written agreement. But again, avoiding arguments in court is important. So mm-hmm. having evidence that, because you want it to just be clear cut, you want the other side to say, yeah, everything's in order. You set the company up and it was, you were serious about setting this company up. So that could provide an advantage to you. It could be irrelevant if a lawsuit ever comes down the pipeline. It could just not matter. Nobody's going to make an issue of it. But I think it doesn't take a whole lot to get one done. And if you're sole owner of an LLC, and just get it done right, just in case it's really important later. Now, if you have multiple owners, I would say you definitely are almost always going to want to have a written agreement so that it's really clear.
If
a dispute arises between you two, I've had clients who said, like, we had a dispute and then we said, well, what does the operating agreement say about this? And they went and looked at it like, well, it is pretty clear. So that resolves that. And then they're done. They don't have to fight about anything. They're like, well, we did agree on it this way. So just avoiding those disputes and planning for the eventual dissolution of the company is really valuable.
It's, you have to plan for the future, even if that's not the future you intend for. And I 100% agree. You know, I've see a lot of people diss partnerships and that they, you know, they always fail and this, that, and the other thing. And it's true, a lot do. But I mean, you can look at the successful marriage rate and the divorce rate. Yeah, partnerships are hard. They take a lot of work. And so if you're going to get in one in business, it's the same as being married to a spouse. And it ain't going to be easy. So you might as well have as much in your corner to help you navigate the relationship as best as possible and come up with solutions before they occur. So I agree with what you're saying. It's just smart.
Yeah. Along with that analogy, it's you prepare the operating agreement for the divorce, not for the honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. So no matter what, it's probably a good idea to have one written up just to be safe. You never know. You just never know what's going to happen. So to have an operating agreement, to have that partnership agreement written up of how things are going to go, if that's the road you're going down, you get your ducks in a row. You know, if you're going to sit there and install floors correctly, look, we have to stop playing business people as contractors, and we have the hand skills. I get that. We're really good at that aspect, but you can't play businessman or businesswoman anymore. You got to get serious about it. Cause the minute you started taking checks, you became a business. And if you're not going to do that part right, you might as well go back to being an employee for somebody and let them handle it. If you don't want to do that role, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. So, sure. What are we doing now? You know, we did start taking these checks and I need to get a contract. I know this. I talked to a law firm years ago and got a quote and said, I'll get to it. And I keep saying, I'll get to it. I got the email in my inbox telling me how much it's going to be. Never done anything about it still. Bought a ton of other tools and spent that money over and over again. So essentially, I'm sending out an estimate, right? And I detail out the work I'm going to do, what it's going to cost, when I want to be paid, how they can pay. They agree to it. I don't get anything signed. I just have this email saying like, yeah, let's go ahead, or a text message that says, yeah, let's do it. And then I take a deposit. I send them an invoice showing that they paid on it. And then the job finishes up. We walk the job. Everything looks good. They give me another check. I give them an invoice that says paid in full. So there's like a little bit of a contract, right? It says I'm going to complete X amount for X dollars, but there's nothing that says, you know, if there's a stoppage in work because it's not my fault and the manufacturer is fighting me on something, or, you know, the product's bad and I can't, get it replaced, or, you know, a plumbing issue comes up that's not within my scope of work, but it's within my scope to, like, discover it. So are these the things we're looking for? Are we focusing more on payment terms? Is it all of it? Like, what kind of stuff is going to go into this contract that we should have?
So I think the most important aspects of your contract with your customers would be payment terms and ensuring that all change orders are in writing, because that is constantly litigated dispute about change orders. Mm. And so it's, well, we didn't know it was going to cost more to have this, do this additional backsplash or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't clear to us. And then you've got a he said, she said again, and you're wondering, well, okay, so what are we going to have to do to figure out what the truth is? What did the parties really agree on here? We're going to have to go through depositions and discovery in court, or not in court, but in a lawsuit to establish. And then you've got to figure out, well, what is the judge going to believe? What's the jury going to believe? And because they have to decide what the terms of the contract were. So yeah, you have an oral contract, even if you don't have anything signed, and you can evidence that with your invoice, but having the clarity up front is really important. And you can get a contract prepared and have a bunch of blanks in it. Like I most of the time am going to prepare a form that a client can use repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're not coming back to me like, hey, I've got another job. You don't have time for that. You're like, all right, I'm going to attach my quote, my scope of work, and we're going to get off and running and get to it. So all they need to do is I'm going to fill in a name and fill out the price and then attach the scope of work. And then we're off and running.
Yeah.
And maybe more importantly than all this is a lot of jurisdictions require you to have a written contract with your customer. So I'm not aware of any states that will find that you can't enforce a contract without having it in writing signed by the customer, but there's certainly states where it's a violation of the contracting rules, and a violation of the contracting rules is sometimes considered a misdemeanor crime. So really you got to get a signed contract with your customer. A lot of people are running around doing them, mm-hmm. and I get it. Like contracts can add, it's another loose end you're dealing with. But unfortunately that's, especially now, that's the world we live in. The handshake times are kind of over.
Well, I think that's what a lot of guys and gals want to be able to do. You know, I like being able to go in. It seems like you're this nice mom and pop business. We're going to shake hands. Everything's going to go really well. But if you have something blow up in your face, one job can put you under. That's all it's going to take for a lot of people is one project. Because even though they're running a business, they're still living project to project. Or, you know, it not everybody is sitting on all these funds that if something goes sideways, they can just throw money at their problem and make it go away. And maybe they don't have proper insurance. So it seems like it makes this business much more serious. But I think if you're running a business and you want to do it right, then you need to have all the parts in place. And so that's why it is something on my list. And it really does need to get taken care of. It's because if I'm going to go out, like I said, I need to stop playing business person and stop playing contractor. You got to do them both at 100%. Otherwise you can't, I don't think you're going to be as successful as you could have been.
Yeah. That's a good point you could have 10 projects go fine with no written contract, and then all of a sudden you get one that it kind of wipes out your gains from all those other contracts. I mean, will wipe out more than 10 projects a lot of times, but having that clarity too, where people can look at a written agreement and be like, oh, you know, I never even thought about that. What do we do in the event that we need to upgrade this or that? Or are these allowances that you're including in the contract, or are these, is it, and what kind of contract is this? Is this cost plus, or is this time and materials, and what kind of contract do we even have here? Sometimes mm-hmm. people are just like, well, I just assume that this thing is going to go great. And I understand that. I mean, I know I'm not innocent of having that just kind of rolling with it when it comes to contractors, stuff like that. So
it can happen. I mean, I had a project go sideways a couple months ago, and there wasn't a change order for some work that needed to be completed, and it did end up causing a little bit of a dispute, and we were able to remedy that and come to an agreement. But had I had a properly written up change order sitting on my dashboard waiting to go, you know, I could have taken a picture of it, sent it off, had them print it out at work and sign it and email it back to me. And that's that. So it just makes sense to document everything, because like you said, we do live in that's just the world these days. There's not, handshake deals don't happen anymore. I can't go down to the bank and Fred knows that I'm this pretty successful flooring guy and I need a loan to get a new truck. We're not going to just shake hands and give me the loan, even though I'm struggling a little bit right now. Like, they're going to run my credit. They're going to look at how much I got in the bank. They're going to look at my assets and they're going to say, nah, man, the numbers don't make sense. You don't get a loan. So you can't, you're risking too much. Every day you're just throwing your business on the line and hoping you get to keep what's in your bank account by not operating properly.
Yeah. And then you get into that situation you had, I imagine you ended up compromising. And if there was some clarity, you just say, well, correct, my time is worth this much. Otherwise you're like, well, I want to avoid the dispute and I want the customer to be happy. And yeah, it wasn't real clear. We never really addressed this issue. So, or sometimes you think, I mean, who wouldn't, why would anybody think that I'm going to do this additional work for the same price I originally quoted?
Correct.
But then you're like, man, is the judge going to get this? Is the jury going to get this? And if you're fighting over a little bit of money, it's not worth hiring a lawyer a lot of times.
No. I mean, if you're like, you can easily go out and make a couple grand real quick. So forget it.
Yep.
But if it gets into something that's tens of thousands, which potentially working on a home, it could be, boy, you're going to want that protection. So totally with you there. So at a bare minimum, we're getting change orders, we're getting contracts with payment terms and scopes of work. Anything else that needs to be in there? Are we, you know, the one of the things I know that could be pointed at is you're moving people's furniture, right? Like, this is something that I try not to. I tell everybody, like, hey, you got to move furniture yourself unless they absolutely need me to, because now I pick up, you know, grandma's hutch that's 120 years old, and my guy's helping me, and we bump the wall and we put a dent in it. Well, yeah, man, I'm not a mover. My insurance might not even cover me touching furniture. That's a question for my insurance guy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be held responsible. Like, I didn't want to move it to begin with, but here I am doing it. So can we put stuff like that in contracts where, like, hey, look, I move it and you pay me, but I'm not responsible for damages? Is that stuff we're looking to do?
Sure. Yeah, you could put any terms like that in there. Or if you want to say, I'm not going to move anything, you need to make sure that everything is clear and I have reasonable access to the workspace, then that is probably preferable rather than relying on a shifting of liability. Because then a lot of times you can't discharge your liability for what would be considered willful negligence but again, insurance is important for something like that, and trying to avoid to the extent you can even relying on that shifting of responsibility is important. Mm-hmm. And then another consideration is your contract with a general contractor, or if you're the general contractor, or you're just subbing out a part of the work or whatever, having a subcontractor agreement is important. And a lot of these things too, in a lot of jurisdictions, having those payment terms written out properly can actually set you up so that you have a greater advantage in the event of a lawsuit, where I sent the invoice according to the terms of my contract, and there was no objection to it within a certain time period that's could be specified by law. So it's a lot of times, in order to avail yourself of a provision like that, you actually have to have language in your contract. And I'll say in some jurisdictions, so like Arizona, you want to make sure you have your Prompt Pay Act language in your contract so that you can say, I sent the invoice, there was no objection. Because a lot of people, they wait till the end of the project and all of a sudden they're having buyer's remorse or something.
Yeah.
And then they start claiming you did all the, making excuses for you did this wrong and you never told me about this. And you say, well, why didn't you object when I actually did the work? Well, and that's kind of the idea of that, that type of law where you need to object within a certain amount of time. We want to make sure that this is as clean as possible. So that's one consideration. And then construction is just, it can turn into a mess no matter what you do. Like if you, I'm sure most of your listeners and you have seen where one sub is getting blamed for damaging something that another sub damaged or that maybe even the homeowner damaged. So when you're talking about moving furniture and there's a scrape along something and it's, I know it was the plumber or mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, no, it was the tile guy or,
yeah.
And those types of things. And so again, it's insurance and it's kind of trying to think on your feet and you do the best you can with these contracts, but really just having as solid a practices as you can, just being honest and good at what you do is really important.
No, totally. I mean, look, you got to start somewhere, right? I know there's a lot of groups online that I participate in on Facebook, and it's a bunch of flooring guys going back and forth, and we talk shop and trade pictures and all kinds of stuff. But a lot of times it'll get into, hey, can I take a look at somebody's contract? Or, hey, if nobody has one, like, I'll send you mine. I'm like, yeah, you're going to want to get that looked over because it may not like apply in your state or you're going to want to make changes. So the thing is you can, you may not get everything right the first time, but if you do have a dispute down the road, you can always update your contract to reflect that new language so you don't run into that problem again. It's not once it's written, it's set in stone. These things can evolve over time too. So you don't have to necessarily get it right out the box. It's gonna live and grow with your business as you grow and adapt to what's going on. So there is an advantage there as well. It can be ever changing.
Right. And that goes to the lawyer as a tradesman as well. Like that's part of how we've developed our agreements is because we've seen the problems that come up and we're like, huh, you know, that would be a really good provision to have in a contract to avoid this type of situation. Mm-hmm. And so going through lawsuits and preparing the contracts, I think is important for lawyers so that they are aware of, and they're constantly getting better at what they're doing. So you go 15 years and you're going to know, sometimes you realize, you know, less than you thought you knew when you were like 7 years in and stuff, but you're definitely better off than you were.
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting our business set up. We get a corporation, or we get an LLC. We get some kind of corporation set up. We're making sure we have proper insurances. We're setting up contracts. Whether it's just, well, there's a lot, right? Now we're looking at, I got to have a contract with my client. I want a contract with my subcontractors if I'm using any. If you bring somebody in, I bring in a guy to do demo for me. I should probably, you know, he's a good buddy, and I know he's properly set up, but I'm not having him sign anything for me. I just send him a 1099 at the end of the year through my bookkeeper. Probably not the greatest idea. He'd be willing to sign whatever paperwork I come up with for it. So got to have some protections there. What else? We're having contracts for what else? The change orders. So we're documenting those and making sure those get taken care of. What else you got? This is, man, I'm screwed. I gotta come down and see you, apparently.
Well, I think that that is essentially what you need to get started is to have your, if you're not even using any subs and you're a sub yourself, so you've got a subcontractor agreement, you're signing with the general. I mean, that's as long as you have your entity set up, you've got your tax issues squared away. And so you've talked to whether that's a, well, really a CPA or a tax attorney. And you've got your insurance and your license, then you, you get your contract with your customer. And if you're, if you've got a big job for a, your, the contract with your general contractor, it may be worth hiring an attorney to look it over. And it, you know, I could say all day that it, there's risk in not having an attorney look at any contract, but the reality of it is a lot of people are like you and your friend with the demo work or whatever. And you're the reality is that you're not going to go call an attorney and get, and be billed $500 an hour or whatever somebody's charging you to look over something. And then you have to establish that relationship with them. So, you kind of choose, you pick and choose what makes sense. You guys are good with common sense. You guys know how people work. And so you got to think those things through. But, you know, the bigger the project, the more vital that attention and reliance on the experts is going to be.
Okay. I like it. You know, you got to, it's all using your head, but there's ways that you can. It's all about mitigating risk. Like you said, like you said in the beginning, like the LLC isn't going to 100% protect you, but it's set up to you're mitigating everything. That's the best you can do, is you're trying to take the least amount of risk as possible, because you already put essentially everything on the line by becoming your own boss and starting a business. So you need to make sure you can maintain that as well as possible.
Right.
So you mentioned you also did some real estate stuff.
Right.
Contractors generally get themselves into some sort of real estate flipping, holding rentals, just because they're in that field. So they have good connections to get work done. They understand the market because they're constantly working in it. So what are you looking to do with entities like that? Like, I've started thinking about it because I would like to build a rental empire, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, if you set up an entity, and so we'll just call it Hedin Holdings, because that's my last name, and now I'm holding these properties. Well, I keep putting $300,000 homes, or, you know, $600,000 fourplexes in it, or whatever I'm doing, right? And so now I have 10 fourplexes, and I've got $6 million worth of homes sitting in an LLC. But if one renter has something go wrong, that's $6 million worth of home that's at stake. So is there, like, would you, it tax wise, it wouldn't make sense to have an LLC for every property, because then I have to pay my tax guy to process every single LLC. But do people like set up smaller ones per, like, but do they like bundle things and there's like a main corporation over things, or like what kind of structures are you seeing with that?
So it's getting back to mitigating risk and diversifying your risk. The way to diversify your risk the most would be to have each property in a separate entity. And those, and I believe tax wise that shouldn't be too much, shouldn't have too much difficulty, because they are pass through entities, and you would get a K-1 from the LLC, and that's something they clarify with a tax advisor. And what I'll do with a client who has multiple rental properties is coordinate with their CPA and say, okay, let's get this set up the best way. Sometimes what they'll do is they'll have one LLC owned by the individual, and that LLC will own all of the other LLCs. So you have this. That way rent is coming in and it's all going to one, that parent LLC, the one that's actually owned by the individual.
Yeah.
And then you can pay out distributions from that entity to the individual. And it kind of simplifies your bookkeeping processes that way, and payroll and things like that. So, yeah. So that often makes sense when you have these rental properties, but But you're right. I mean, if you have all of them in one LLC, that one LLC is all of its assets are subject to collection for liability for any one of those projects. So I've had clients too who said, I don't want to have multiple LLCs. I'm just going to do, or I don't want to have too many. So I'm going to do two properties per LLC.
Yeah.
And that's that business decision. That's the risk you're taking. Like if you don't want to pay to set up those separate LLCs, I can understand. I mean, I get why they're trying to kind of reduce their expenses. But in other states too, you can do series LLCs. I don't think Arizona's ready for or has approved that yet. But in a lot of states, there are series LLCs, and you can actually just do a little compartmentalized LLC. So you can set up a bunch based on one LLC, and it's just a series. So you have Bill's Construction LLC 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, and it kind of simplifies in order to address that issue of trying to avoid overcomplicating your life while at the same time allowing you to diversify your risk.
Interesting. It's amazing how things change from state to state like that. And some people are like, oh, we'll accept that. And now we're not quite ready for that. And then even within just for contracting, like I'm pretty sure, I don't think Ohio is a licensed contractor state. You know, it's always plumbing and electrical.
Yeah.
But Arizona, I know, I think there's only like 13 or 20 or something like that out of the 50 states that actually have licensing requirements for more than those two trades.
Right.
And it's, yeah, just go pick up a hammer. You can go be a general contractor and build a house. No problem. Okay, do it. All right.
Yeah. And a lot of these states, I mean, a lot of it's just competing with each other. You set up these series LLCs, like Delaware was the original corporation state where that's where everything was set up because it was,
yeah.
They had this limited liability protection, and then all the other states were like, let's see how this plays out, and started slowly getting along on that route. But some states, it's an annual fee. You have to pay a tax, and like California, you're paying at least $600 per business for a franchise tax. And then it can also increase based on your revenue. A lot of states, there's a lot more upfront costs than Arizona, where you have like, you know, $85 in the cost, and then it's a perpetual LLC.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy down here. I can't complain, that's for sure. It's set it up and it's done until you decide to file the paperwork with the newspaper and run it for 3 weeks again, saying I've dissolved this entity or I've changed this entity somehow. So.
Yeah, but it is a shock. Like when I came from Ohio out to Arizona, and then just getting to learning what all the intricacies of the Registrar of Contractors are out here. It's just a different world.
Correct. Well, you mentioned earlier that a lot of the stuff with contracting is a misdemeanor, and that always surprises me, in that these guys can run around as unlicensed contractors down here, you know, rob people of thousands of dollars, and they're like slapped on the wrist with a misdemeanor. And I'm like, but no, they put people at so much risk, and it doesn't make sense for it to be such a small crime, in my opinion. It's like a slap on the wrist.
But then I'm not sure. I'd have to look back on the felony status. I mean, because you could run into a theft in a situation where you take money, do any work, and then you could have a felony level. But and then you also have a lot of things that fall into it, like not having your contract in writing signed. But yeah, coming up with the laws to try to, you know, fix all the problems with. The world is definitely a tricky situation.
Oh, somebody will get it one by one, right? Oh, that happened. We'll have to fix this. Oh, that happened. We'll make this rule. So,
yep. Somebody do something. Pass another law.
We're getting there. I mean, can you think of anything that we're, I know this is a general overview, like we can't get into each person's individual specifics. And obviously I get the privilege of being the guy asking the questions so we can get into some of mine, but that's where the thoughts come from. And they're generally pretty good for everybody. But is there anything that we need to cover that we missed?
No, I think that's generally a good overview of everything. And I'll just say that addressing some of these issues that you don't want to deal with, you just want to get out there and get to work and do what you do best. If once you address those issues and you start to realize it's not as complicated as it might seem, and there's some upfront expense, but there's peace of mind that comes with it. And you will learn a lot more, and you'll be a greater asset to your colleagues and family to be able to spot those issues. And like, you know, I sat down with a professional for tax reasons or whatever, and like, this is an issue, you should go before this thing gets out of hand. You probably want to sit down with somebody, make an appointment, and really get that tailored advice to your specific situation. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of competition out there too to provide these services for contractors. So it's not tens of thousands of dollars for just getting set up.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can go on what it's like LegalZoom or something like that. Don't do that. Go find somebody local to your area. But you can go online and have legal entities do it, or they're probably having paralegals and that are working in that state do it. But you got options. But it's like you said earlier, right? The $500 you're going to spend on like a contract, or maybe you spend $1,500 on getting a contract written up or something, or you know, a couple hundred to form the entity. What's that going to save you on the back end if and when a problem arises? You know, $500 now could save you $50,000 later in trouble, and it's just done and dealt with, and you throw $1,000 at it instead of the $50,000. That's a way better deal.
Sure. And I think just having that, you can kind of show those who you're dealing with, whether it's other contractors or your customers, that you try to do things the right way. Not yeah. cutting corners. You've got a legitimate contract that is clear. You know, like, that's our deal, is we want to help you put a deal together. If you can put it together and it's not something that's extremely objectionable, mm-hmm. we want to help you. We don't want to get in the way of that situation. So setting something up that's nice and clear and not a whole bunch of legal jargon in it that's an important.
Yeah. No, I think goal. that's the key is, you know, we were talking about handshake deals before, is people say like, you know, I'm going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to shake, we're going to walk away. If you can lay out a document that's fairly simple, straightforward, does the same thing, it is going to separate you from your quote unquote competitors out there. It's going to differentiate you from all the other contractors around because you're doing something different from them, and it's going to help you look a little bit different. You know, if it comes down to a couple hundred dollars difference between, you know, Jim Bob in a beat up truck and you, that contract might be the thing that puts you over the top and is worth the extra $200 because they're going to feel more safe with you than Jim Bob driving his beat up truck around and he doesn't have anything in place. So yeah, they like shaking sure. hands, but that contract that's the professional thing that's just going to put you over the top and it really help you close the deal. I mean, it could go the other way. They could say you're too serious for me and I like Jim Bob and his handshake, but I bet you more times than not, the contract puts you over the top because other people don't have them.
Sure.
So, all right. You're here in Phoenix. You're in Ohio. You mentioned one other place, and I forget, Texas. You're licensed yep. in Texas as well. So, if you are in those three states, I know I have friends in Ohio. I got a bunch of friends in Ohio. I've got friends in Texas, and I know I got friends here. So, you reach out to Josh. You get yourself set up right. And if you are elsewhere, you're on your own. You gotta go look. Now, I will say that I was previously in a BNI networking group. It's and I'm still part of the Arizona Facebook group page. And so whenever I have these outside the flooring contractors like episodes, that's the group I go to because I know I'm going to find a super solid person to talk to about it. So I would recommend starting there. So there's a free plug for BNI. I should probably go try and get some sponsorship. talk to Mr. Miser about that. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that if I can, anybody has any questions, and I would be happy to help to the extent I can. And if you're looking for something in Ohio or Texas, I can also try to, if I can't help with something, then try to help you find somebody that's a good fit for you or anything like that. But our firm can be found online at davidsonlaw.net. So that has our contact information if you're interested. But
awesome. No, I very much appreciate it. All right, Josh. I think that's going to do it unless you got any other nuggets. But I think we got that general base covered. Obviously, everyone is a separate case and needs to get a consult on their direct problems and how they're set up and running and what they need. But I appreciate it, man. Your time is very valuable, and you've been more than generous with it, for sure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Hopefully we talk soon. I'm not kidding. I think I need to set up an appointment and get down there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So
grab lunch or whatever. And
okay.
Talk it over.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this week. To keep the conversation going, head on over to the Floor Academy Facebook group. Be sure to subscribe so you can hear each and every episode. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and most major podcast directories. Don't forget to leave a review and let us know what you think about the show. If you would like to be a guest, have questions or feedback, you can email us at flooracademypodcast@gmail.com. You can help support the show by becoming a patron over at www.patreon.com/Floor Academy. Remember to learn while you earn.